Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, the Mariners get that very important series win, but I'm not starting with Mariners yet. We will get to that in about 30 minutes. Don't worry. Before then, though, the latest from Seahawks OTAs. We heard from offensive coordinator Shane Waldron, tight end Noah Fant, defensive end Uchenna Nwosu, all kinds of guys. I'm going to focus on Waldron for this one because Shane Waldron, Jake, talking about the quarterback battle out between Geno Smith and Drew Lock. Now, I want to take callers later in the show. Coming up, let's do about 1 p.m. Let's do 1 p.m. to see how you guys feel about Baker Mayfield, because Brock Heward, friend of the show, obviously, longtime host here, has a poll out about whether or not people would want to see Baker Mayfield in Seattle. It's almost an even split, Jake.
Really? How many votes do we have on this thing?
Almost an even split. I don't have it in front of me because you caught me off guard because I spoke too soon.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
Okay, I'm pulling it up right now.
Wow.
He has 3,555 votes. Seahawks fans, do you want Baker Mayfield when he becomes available? 52% say no. What? What? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm very curious about Drew Lock. I think we know what we have with Geno Smith, and I personally think he's going to be your week one starter. But you're telling me to my face that if Baker Mayfield, not your long-term answer, if Baker Mayfield became available and you could sign him for relatively cheap, you wouldn't just for fun want to see what he looks like in Seattle? Does no one want to have fun? What's going on?
I am utterly surprised.
I'm
honestly
shocked.
I'm utterly surprised.
Baker Mayfield's a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah, but there's a lot of things that, you know.
Well, no, because there are people that are like, I don't want a guy who's a diva. I don't care.
This is like
how
the OBJ.
Chaotic 2022 is going to be.
It's the OBJ conversation, Stacey.
OBJ.
Yeah, remember
Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes,
I
you
was
remember
LBJ.
Last year how everybody was like, you know, don't bring him here. He won't be good.
Yeah,
He's a
yeah.
cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, everywhere he goes, and then you know, does a really good job when he showed up for the Rams. I mean, you know, so it's very similar to me in that conversation, overhyping Baker Mayfield. Yeah, does he have diva tendencies? Is he the perfect leader that I would love
no.
to have? No. But in regards to, you know, the options available, Baker Mayfield is the clear best option out there, and it just is mind-blowing.
I
now,
just
the
don't
only
know why
argument,
you wouldn't choose fun and chaos at
no,
all times.
No, Stacey, the only argument that I can get on board
there
with.
There is no argument.
Oh,
Jake.
There's an argument.
There's not an argument.
Yes,
what's,
there is.
What's the argument?
The argument is, if you're going to have a stopgap quarterback, you know this year is just a stopgap quarterback situation regardless, because you know that eventually they want to try to draft their guy and land their guy of the future, whoever that may be, in the 2023 draft, then why not be bad? Why not
yeah.
have your stopgap quarterback be Drew Lock or Geno Smith, where the upside, you're more likely to, you know, have a 5-win season or somewhere around there than bringing in Baker Mayfield, and your ceiling as a team becomes higher. And you're lessening your draft positioning if you're thinking long term in terms of 2023. That's the only argument that I can get
two
on board
things.
With.
Number one, you have two firsts and two seconds. So if you end up in the teens, you can always move up a little bit.
Sure,
I don't know
but
if that's
why,
enough. That's not enough capital depending on where Denver finishes and where you finish.
But why not be there to begin with?
I understand and I get it. But I cannot believe that Pete Carroll would enter a season saying, all right, let's go pick number five. Let's get this done.
No, they're not doing that. But also, I mean, there's best case and worst case. There's best case and worst case. And I think that, you know, if you're looking at this and you're saying worst case scenario, your stopgap quarterback is your team overall. There's a lot of good things with the team that you feel good about, and you're developing the team. And the quarterback, the play just has not
okay, look,
lived up
I'll,
to the standard.
I want to move on.
You can live with that.
I want to move on to what Shane Waldron has to say. I'm seeing some responses from people on the Mac and Jex text line, 206-421-3776. Hang on to that number because that's the call-in number for 1 p.m. when we get back to the Baker Mayfield conversation. There is one answer I will accept. The only answer I will accept is one that I'm seeing on here from a couple different people, which is, well, you don't want to be in the top 10 in picks, so why not just try to see what you have in lock, and then worst case scenario, you're horrible, but you get a high draft pick. I will accept that answer. The one I have a hard time with is that Baker Mayfield is truly a horrible quarterback that would not win you any games, and that Drew Lock and Geno Smith are significantly better options. Like, that's the answer that I have a hard time with. If your answer is, oh, well, I don't really want to be that good. Like, I don't want to be competitive. I don't want to be just outside of the playoffs. Then I accept. I accept that answer, and I accept my loss here. All right, so we heard a couple things from Shane Waldron yesterday on the quarterback battle, which right now does not include Baker Mayfield. No, that is between Drew Lock and Geno Smith. So we're going to start with where it stands right now, which is no one's in front.
I think really just the overall command of the position, you know, who gives us the best chance to win games when it comes to the fall. And right now it's just a good learning op where we're, you know, this time of year where we're in t-shirt and shorts for them to really build that foundation where they can go into training camp and put themselves in the best positions to compete.
All right, so things that we learned from Shane Waldron. Number one, the quarterback battle's ongoing. He said that they've been really flexible with who's on the first and second team right now, won't really iron some of that out for quarterbacks until training camp. He said it's something we'll sit down and discuss exactly how we want to balance out those reps. So quarterback battle, still to be determined. And yeah. If you see Geno out with the ones or Drew out with the ones, it doesn't necessarily mean much right now because they haven't really decided how to divvy up those reps.
It will not mean much all the way through training camp. You've got to look at preseason performances. You've got to look at when you're going through training camp, what those reps will look like with, you know, what they do with them when they're with the ones, when they're with the twos. They're going to mix and match this thing. But ultimately, as you heard Shane Waldron say, and as I said before that clip, this is not on even footing right now because Drew Lock is very much playing catch-up to Geno Smith in learning this offense and really trying to have an understanding of it. So you're hoping that this during this time you can get everybody learning the playbook, get everybody on the same page, get Drew Lock caught up to where Geno Smith is in terms of an overall, you know, knowledge perspective to where he's comfortable, and then the competition, the evaluation is on from the very first practice of training camp.
All right, so speaking of Geno, cut number six, here's what Waldron had to say about his development.
Drew's done a great job of really picking up the offense quickly. He's got a great overall understanding of the game. And so he's done a nice job of, you know, really starting from a little bit of a back seat right there, just from a pure knowledge standpoint, being in the first time in the system, to really jumping in here and maximizing the time we've had out on the field.
All right, so look, Geno has a built-in edge knowing the offense, but Drew's picking it up well.
And that's what you're wanting to see. So this is a part where, okay, he doesn't say how well he's picked it up, how close is he to Geno Smith's knowledge, just saying that, hey, he's doing a good job day-to-day picking up this offense. And for Drew Lock, Stacey, that is something that is very important for him to show and display, because that was something that was a major question mark about Drew Lock coming out of Denver. And so what you want to be able to display if you're Drew Lock is, hey, I have the maturity and the smarts to go from one day to the next, understanding and owning the playbook, and that I can be trustworthy. That is Drew Lock's job, is to be able to gain the trust of this coaching staff and of his teammates, and that's what he's trying to do every single day throughout this period.
All right, so cut number nine, he was talking about seeing Drew Lock off the field. Now, he mentioned that, like, look, the play is going to have to follow it up, but so far it seems like he's a guy people want to follow.
You know, really the personality part of Drew, you know, you get a chance to see him on tape and have those evaluations there, but just a good person that's doing a great job of connecting with his teammates, really a good teammate in general as far as working hard, wanting to do the right thing. I think doing a great job of just adjusting to a whole new building, a whole new set of people that he's working with. So getting to know him as a person and knowing he's the type of guy that guys will want to follow as long as he keeps putting in this hard work and doing the right thing like he's been doing each day and every day here.
So, I mean, you have Drew Lock, who seems like a guy that could become that leader, could become that guy long term. Shane Waldron certainly co-signing on his attitude there at OTAs. You have Geno, who knows the playbook and knows the offense. But just overall, the 3 points I wrote down. The quarterback battle's ongoing. The offense will clearly look different without Russell Wilson. Shane Waldron says that they always try to stick to the basic philosophy and principles, but they also want to adjust to the strength of the players they have. So obviously it's going to look different. And number three, Drew Lock's out here making friends. That's what I wrote down at the end. Exactly. The idea that Drew Lock is out here, he's trying to be a good teammate. He's trying to ingratiate himself with the Seahawks offense. And if the play can back it up, then you've got someone who has the capabilities of being a good leader.
And I think someone that, to me, there's no question in terms of Drew Lock's likability factor. Even, you know, talking to people in Denver, you know, people really liked Drew Lock, you know, as the person, really liked him as a teammate. But, you know, there were other factors that did not allow him to have the success that his talent, is capable of performing at the NFL level. And so I really believe that this is the time where you're just trying to get him caught up to speed so that he can go out confidently in training camp and compete against Geno Smith. Because as of right now, Stacey, as it currently stands, if we were to play right now, Geno Smith's your starter, and it's not even close. I mean, Geno Smith has that much more of a grasp of the offense, a clear understanding of what he's doing, the confidence of the coaching staff and everyone else.
Sorry, Jake. Are you saying that I was right?
No,
about
that's not what I'm
Geno
saying.
Smith would be the
starter? No. That's not what I'm saying, Stacey.
I don't know.
I'm saying that from day one, when they brought in Drew Lock and they signed Geno Smith, that Geno Smith automatically had the edge to be the starting quarterback because of the familiarity. The desire of the organization as to who ends up starting is a completely different conversation. They want, in their mind, in the perfect world, they want Drew Lock to be able to surpass Geno Smith and to be able to catch up to not only his knowledge of the playbook, but also from a talent perspective, they feel like he has the ability to surpass Geno Smith and to, you know, be a tremendous, I wouldn't say boost, but I would say be a surprise to everyone in terms of what Drew Lock could do under center in this system, under this organization, mm-hmm. rather than his failed experience in Denver. So that is the difference in this conversation. But it's just to show that, look, what Geno Smith is doing or what he has done over the last 4 years is he's gained trust of Pete Carroll. That's why he wanted him back so badly, right? Is because worst case scenario, you know what you're going to get with Geno Smith. From an upside perspective, you're hoping that Drew Lock really grows his game and is really matured as a player and as a person to where he can overcome some of the mistakes that he made in the past that held him back from, you know, realizing his talent.
All right. So again,
don't get ahead of yourself.
What are you talking about?
I am not admitting.
I don't know. I think you could admit it. Is the latest from Shane Waldron out of OTA. Shane Waldron, though, not the only player or coach to speak. So I'm going to tell you guys what Noah Fant had to say coming up in about 30 minutes. Before we get to that, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
All right. The headline here starts with the Celtics stun the Warriors with a huge fourth quarter to take game one of the NBA Finals. My real headline. The Warriors need to do this for all of us, Jake. They really, really need to do this for all of us.
As we know, the Boston Celtics are not necessarily a team that we here in Seattle would love to root for. Why? Because Boston fans are...
End of story. Because Boston fans.
Because
Boston fans. And I'm done. I will say it a million times over. I don't care if anyone from Boston is hearing me. I don't like you.
Because all you do is complain. All you do is act like you have the right to go to every championship.
Every time.
Known to man.
And the thing is, first of all, one of my very favorite people on the planet, Maura Dooley, is a Boston fan. Her whole family's from Boston. And I love her, and yet I hate her fandom because, again, any Boston fan that tries to point and say it stems from jealousy, yeah. Yeah, it does. I live in a city where first of all, there are a lot of phenomenal teams here, but your professional football team has won one Super Bowl and has had two heartbreaking losses. One because they were cheated by the refs, and one because of a horrible, horrible decision. And then you have a baseball team that hasn't made the playoffs for 20 years. Like, why would I not Why? And your NBA team was
never
stolen.
Been to a World
Why
Series.
Why would I not be jealous of a city that has so many championships?
Yep.
Why would I not?
Just got an NHL team.
Yeah.
Our NBA team got taken away from us.
No.
Yeah, of course.
But it's also
obnoxious to hear people, oh, we haven't been to a championship in 3 years. This is unacceptable.
No, it's miserable.
Get out of here.
I'm so
entirely
sorry for you.
With
I'm
that
so, I don't know how you get through it. I really don't. I'll pray for you.
Ugh.
Headline rewrites.
All right. Despite Phil Knight's offer of more than $2 billion with a B, the Portland Trailblazers have denied that the team is for sale. Real headline, Knight is reportedly going to increase his offer by allowing unlimited employee store access. Let me tell you what, that can save you a lot of money. That you know when you have friends that are like, I'm going to the employees' Ooh. Nike store. What do you want, man?
What's the, give me the hookup. Let's go. I'll tell you,
that gets the deal done for me.
I've been to the employee store 3 times in my life. All 3 times that I went there, I spent more money than if I would just go to a regular store. Why? Because it's like 50-60% off.
Like you're making money.
You do. So you're like, oh, I'm going to get
that.
That's
how they get you.
And 3 pairs of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go over here and I'm going to get, you know, sweatpants and an additional set of sweatpants just because.
Yep.
You walk out of there and you're...
You play yourself.
Yes, you do.
You played yourself because you think...
You don't take advantage of the discount.
No, because the way that sales work and the way that getting discounts work in our stupid brains is that because I'm spending less on one item, I can heretofore get 10 items. And then you leave thinking like, or I could have just done what it was meant for and paid less for something I wanted. And instead I was like, well, I have extra money now.
Yes.
You don't.
No. But you do. You have the extra money to spend it on other things. I mean, don't you see how this works?
Oh, God.
Come on.
It's, you know what? I am not surprised. So the initial report from the New York Times said that the offer was private, which is why there wasn't a lot of information about it and why an NBA spokesperson didn't comment on the matter. But so I am not overall surprised to see them deny that the team is for sale. Although, would anyone be surprised long term to see the Allen Trust, the Allen family, move on from both the Seahawks and Trailblazers? No. I mean, I've kind of assumed that that is the long-term answer there, though. By long-term, I mean I don't know how many years out for the Blazers, but certainly we heard that Brock Heward sound, 2025, 2026 for the Seahawks. So not imminent, though perhaps inevitable.
Yeah, and also, you know, a friend of the show, John Canzano, has really done a lot of work on this, and you know, I think that it is something that will happen at some point. It's just a matter of when. And maybe this offer by Phil Knight was just too early, right? Knowing that it's going to happen and trying to get ahead of it. I don't think that this conversation is over. It's just getting started, and obviously everyone here in the Northwest is going to be very interested to see how this all plays out and what ends up happening, because not only is it a domino for the Trailblazers and the health of the Trailblazers moving forward in their future, but also what that could potentially mean here in Seattle with the Seahawks. So we will definitely keep our eye on this story, and I don't think it's going to go away. But if there was ever an ownership group to take over the Trailblazers, I mean, how could you not want Phil Knight to take that thing over? It makes too much sense.
From the 206, I hate the saying, the more you buy, the more you save, because it's actually the more you buy, the more you spend. You're not wrong. I just don't want to realize. I don't want to realize that in the moment. I want to think that in my mind, I want to think that team store discount or the employee discount is actually kind of like giving me free things.
Yeah, it's true. And JD in the 509, he I think he says this accurately. He says, wrong. You're just buying the things that you wish you could at a normal Nike store. Yes and no. There are exclusive things that are at the employee store that are hard to find everywhere else. I will give you that. But it's also the feeling that you are saving money. You know, like it really is. Like you trick yourself into being like, all right, I can't just walk out of here with one pair of shoes. I can't walk out of here with a single pair of sweatpants. That would be a failure to this experience. When am I going to do this again? I need to capitalize on it right here and now.
While I would love to do the next 3.5 hours on just human psychology around spending, especially with a bunch of Nike gear that we want, I have to get to the third headline, so let's go.
No, no.
Yeah,
headline rewrites.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver says the league isn't currently discussing expansion, but he did say at some point the league will invariably expand. Real headline? Well, if not in 2024, then when?
I don't know. Like, the NBA has been so annoying about this conversation. So incredibly cryptic, and you know, they have always, it feels like they are just pushing it down the road. Like, you know, a few years ago where you thought that, all right, the expansion could be happening here now. And they push it back, and they push it back. I don't know what they're waiting for, because honestly, if you get two expansion teams, that is a huge amount of revenue that comes into your league. I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars.
I mean, there's more revenue to share. But again, I don't...
Yeah.
It's frustrating to me to hear them constantly say, we want to do this. Don't worry. This is something we want to do. And it's just been something that's said for years and years and years. And it doesn't feel like a wrong has been righted. And I don't know when it will be.
But it doesn't make any sense. Why not? Why not? And Adam Silver
because
talks
you
about...
Because owners that may not want to... split money with more
but
people.
They're getting money up front. They're
know,
getting billions
think...
of dollars up front, Stacey.
I know, but
you're telling me they're walking away from a massive check right from the get-go, and their revenue share is going to be somewhat increased because of the fact that you're breaking into the Seattle market and into Vegas reportedly.
Conspiracy theory. What if there are some owners that like the idea that there are forever going to be at least a couple cities, Seattle and Vegas being two of them, certainly Seattle, that want an NBA team so bad that they can constantly threaten relocation to Seattle to get new stadiums.
I don't think that's a conspiracy at all.
I mean, hey.
You've got that in your back pocket. It's always there. But I really just don't understand the NBA's stance on this and their take on this and why they are... you know, being so cryptic about it makes zero sense to me. Everyone knows that Seattle and Vegas are the two next destinations, and that it's a no-brainer, and that they should get it done. Why are they dragging their feet? Why?
We were talking about discounts on things, playing tricks on our mind. Seth in Fresno, man, I'm saving 50. I'm spending 100 more. Seth, I am right there with you, man. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. The Mariners got a much-needed series win against Baltimore, but it also included some unneeded heart-racing moments. So what went well and what's got to change ahead of the next stop on this road trip? That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
I have good news and I have news. The good news is the Mariners got a much-needed series win over the Baltimore Orioles, taking that finale 7-6, that game going into extras. Now for the news.
What does that even mean?
Well,
what
is it? I can't say bad news because you won. It's not bad news if you won, but it's like, ugh.
Is it like meh? Is it more
not,
like that?
No, it's not meh. You're not indifferent. You're just like,
oh,
you know, it's that kind of news.
I'm just learning. I'm just trying to have the audience learn your sound effects
in terms of what they
mean.
That's what I mean. It's a very complex scientific measurement of not so greatness.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that being that, the bullpen wasn't especially solid. Here's what Scott Servais had to say after that one.
You know, again, our offense is doing what they need to do. Really happy with how we're swinging the bats. You know, we had a good first night here. Last night, not so much, but tonight we got it going again. And we're going to need to continue to do that to create a little room for our bullpen and as those guys work through some things. So we need more depth, you know, in our bullpen. We need some more guys to step up. You know, the guys at Mooney's been solid. Diego's got it rolling again. We know what Seawald could do, but we need some other guys, you know, to continue to step up when we're ahead in the game.
Now, you had a 6-1 lead going into the bottom of the sixth, then allowed three runs. You obviously get a tie game. You go through scoreless three innings, and then the Mariners, thanks to an RBI triple from Abraham Toro, get that run in the 10th, and that's enough to win the game. But ooh, man, that bullpen, which was so solid for you last year, nails for you last year, continues to be a problem. And here's the thing. You gave your bullpen enough offense. You got 12 hits. 12 hits as a team yesterday. 7 runs off of that. Walked 5 times. I mean, that's a great day offensively.
It is a great day offensively. There's no question about that. And you know, the Orioles and Mariners kind of went back and forth. And then you have this explosion in the sixth. That really put you in a I would say, you know, somewhat comfortable lead there at the top of the sixth. And then your guy, Stacy, Matt Festa, comes in and, you know, it just, this experience has not worked out. And I don't understand why Festa gets thrown out there as much as he does. But, you know, I think this speaks to not just a singular problem with one pitcher, but more so with the bullpen in general, is that, you know, you just have not been able to find the consistency that you need. I mean, I don't think Scott Servais has been able to find a true comfortable rhythm with his bullpen in terms of knowing where guys are going to play at their best, what roles are going to be established, and who can he count on in what situations. And that has been, I think, the most difficult aspect for Servais up to this point. You know, bats in lineups, you know, go through hot and cold streaks. And obviously with this lineup, you're hoping that they can continue to keep improving and that they will get better. And bats will start to come alive. It was great to see, you know, Jesse Winker and Luis Torrens, their 3 hits, Stacy. But, you know, for them to be able to really compete at a high level, the bullpen does need to get figured out. It does need to be ironed out. And you do need to be able to establish a group of guys in that pen that you know you can go to. And that's why, you know, 2021 was such a success, is that Scott Servais really had his finger on the pulse of that bullpen, and you had a lot of guys that were going to deliver and give you very, very consistent outings. And so far that has not been the case overall for this bullpen.
253, correct me. Yes, my bad. 6-3 lead, not 6-1. Yes, absolutely correct. Secondly, 3-6-0 explosion to implosion. You had a great inning. You had a fantastic inning.
What,
you
like
have 10
like
batters
that.
In
yes.
that inning. Julio gets to the plate twice, and it's obviously not enough. I came so close, by the way. I had 2 chances to get that grand slam for those donuts.
Mm-hmm.
Did not happen.
Yeah, you had multiple opportunities. It just wasn't meant to be. And you know what? I'm really bitter that you didn't bring them today.
I wanted Curtis to be able to have some. I didn't think it would be fair for you to have them all yourself. Curtis
so you
was
didn't
here
want,
to encourage
you didn't want Matt to have them?
Matt, I would always Matt in for Curtis
Matt,
today.
Just so you know.
Matt, listen. Don't listen to what Jake is saying, but I'm going to allow him to talk here.
I'm just telling you that I hope you realize that she just picked Curtis over you to partake in the donuts.
Can you blame her? I'd pick Curtis over me.
What? No, Matt. No, 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 no. She was supposed to bring them today. It was supposed to be today, and she didn't follow through, okay?
I'm sorry.
It's all right. I was really looking forward to it this morning.
It's not all right. I'll bring it Monday. Donuts on Monday because the Mariners, unless Jake.
Okay.
Double or nothing.
No, we're not doing double or nothing.
Let's do it, brother.
No.
Double or nothing.
Double.
The Mariners will get a grand slam in this series against Texas, or I will bring in donuts 2 days in a row.
No.
And if they don't, or if they do, you have to bring in donuts just 1 day.
No, absolutely.
Jake, do it.
Absolutely not.
Jake, take it. Jake. Double or nothing.
Jake, do it.
Double.
Do it.
Jake, do it.
No, I'm
do
not
it,
doing
Jake.
It.
You're telling me that you really think that in this series against Texas,
I think that there is a larger chance that it could happen at any point in this series than one specific player in one specific game.
Jake,
so yes.
Jake.
Yes.
Double or nothing.
Saying my name
listen,
more times is
listen,
not going to
listen,
get me to agree
listen,
to this.
Double or nothing for tonight. I will bring in donuts Monday and Tuesday if they don't hit a grand slam tonight. Jake, take this
okay,
bet.
Okay, and I just have to do it one time?
Jake, come on.
And Matt.
Come on. Shake on it, Jake.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, man, I have a problem.
Yeah. yes, you
someone
do.
Said, Jake, you're crazy for not taking that bet. This is easy money. What are you doing? Stacy apparently doesn't know the meaning of double or nothing. I don't.
Yeah, because it would be Ty France getting a grand slam if it was double or nothing. But you know what? All right, here we go.
So that means I have to say there's 2 grands? I don't understand.
No, you.
We already made the
no,
bet. It's
today, there has to be a grand slam. There has to be a grand slam.
Okay. And then if there is, you bring in donuts, And if there is not a grand slam, I will bring in donuts 2 days because I already owe you one day.
Correct. Monday okay. and Tuesday.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Fine. I'm moving on.
Okay, good. Actually, you know what? I don't want them 2 days in a row. I want them Monday and Friday.
Fine.
We're on Monday and Friday of next
Great.
Week.
Fantastic. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. There's something we've been hearing about the Seahawks offense for 2 years now. It just didn't feel true last year, but it might change in 2022 without Russell Wilson. That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, I have a myth to bust, but then a statement to uphold a little bit when it comes to tight end usage in the Seahawks. That is where we're going with this one. So we heard from Shane Waldron yesterday at Seahawks OTAs, earlier this week at Seahawks OTAs. We also heard from Noah Fant. We've heard from him so far this season that after that trade, but we also heard from him at OTAs for the first time yesterday. So I want to talk about tight end usage for the Seattle Seahawks. Let's start with what Shane Waldron had to say about why they might be considered a tight end friendly offense.
I think, Noah makes it tight end friendly as well. You know, the good tight ends make any offense tight end friendly. So I think just having the ability, we got, you know, the group of guys right now that can do a little bit of everything. So the more tight ends can do, you know, the more chances we can move them around and not necessarily just have to line them up in a static inline position and give them a chance to move around and present different looks for a defense. And so we've got guys between Will Dissly and Colby Parkinson, Noah's joined the mix now, and Tyler Mabry that can all do a little bit of everything. So in that regard, it makes it friendly for the tight end, I think, in terms of, you know, getting out in the pass game, helping out in the run game, doing a little bit of everything, not necessarily just one thing.
Waldron saying, look, we've got a nice versatile group of tight ends is basically what he's saying there. Here's what Noah Fant had to say.
You know, honestly, I like now, granted, this is from just like a month coming in, but I like the way they use the tight ends. I like the way we get passing concepts down the field. The run game, obviously, it's going to be all built off the run game, which is a huge part of the game. And obviously, the play action is going to be huge. So it's a very balanced offense, which I like. And, it's very favorable to the tight end. So it's nice.
What did we hear last year? That the Seahawks would utilize their tight ends even more because of Shane Waldron, a former tight end coach himself, and also bringing in a tight end from the Rams. You heard Shane Waldron this offseason, just yesterday, saying that they're probably going to be considered a tight end friendly offense in general because of the versatility they have with a good tight end group. Noah Fant saying, look, in the month that I've been here, just the month, so far it seems like a very tight end friendly offense. So that's the sound.
Look,
let
Stacey,
me give you some numbers.
I've only been here for like a couple days, but this place seems pretty awesome. This
it
seems pretty
say?
Great.
So let me give you some actual numbers here, because I think that one of the things that we've all been, I don't want to say guilty of, but one of the things that we've all said about this team, and I've done this as well, so I'm including myself, is that this team doesn't utilize tight ends as much as they should. And at times I've looked at Russell Wilson and said, is Russell Wilson, you know, part of the reason that they haven't? So here are some actual numbers to work with. Do with them what you will. First, as far as this is from Fantasy Pros, the total targets for tight ends. The Seahawks are near the bottom, so bottom third. They aren't anywhere. They're not at the bottom. The Panthers, Jets, Bengals, Bills, Saints, and Rams all used their tight ends less frequently than did Seattle. Seattle with 97 targets, around the same as the Minnesota Vikings, and just behind the Green Bay Packers and Washington Commanders. Teams that use their tight ends most, no surprise here, Kansas City Chiefs in there, Travis Kelce, 134 targets. Also the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Gronk and Cameron Brate, both getting 50-plus targets, nearly 60-plus targets apiece. And then you've got Baltimore, Miami, and Cleveland in there as well, along with Atlanta, who has Kyle Pitts, of course, 110 targets for him, a fantastic rookie season. So in terms of tight end utilization, yes, the truth is, at least last year, the Seahawks were in the bottom third of the league. Now, they were in there with some teams that you're kind of modeling after in terms of tight end usage. The Rams were in there, but that's the reality of it. In terms of how Russell Wilson uses his tight ends, he has never had a tight end target share as high as he did with Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham with between 23 and 18% of targets. There was one off year when Jacob Hollister had 18.9%, but wasn't as productive as Graham was with those targets. So you essentially haven't had as many yards from a tight end since Jimmy Graham in 2017 when he had 18% of targets. Last year, they were actually up. Target share for tight ends was 15% from the year prior. So The reality is they did use tight ends more last year. They did genuinely use their tight ends more last year. And Gerald Everett had career highs in a couple different categories. Why doesn't it feel like it was enough?
Well, what I would say is that the time it was used, right? So I think there's a lot of the conversation about Russell Wilson and his chart in terms of where the throws are going, everything being more towards heavily favored towards the numbers rather than being towards the middle of the field. How do you take advantage of the middle of the field? Well, you got to use your tight ends more. And so I think that was a big part of the conversation there with the tight ends. Also, I think just in general, you've had tight ends such as Gerald Everett, Will Dissly, that you feel like, gosh, these guys are good players and you would love to see them be more incorporated in the offense. And there just wasn't really a third receiver that really made their claim
regularly.
Whether it's tight end or receiver. I mean, I would say
wide receiver three.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that particular year in 2017, I believe it was.
He had
a breakout year for himself and all that. They have not had a stable third receiver, mm-hmm. tight end or receiver behind the two guys, right? The two top receivers, Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett, then Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. And that just is kind of the way that this offense has been. However, I do think it is important to note that statistically, when you look at it, they were towards the bottom third, but it was also better than I think what people would anticipate the numbers would lay out being.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I think Noah Fant is speaking to the excitement that he has for what he's able to do in this offense is that they are moving him all over the board. They are moving him, everywhere. He's not just stagnant being a guy that is on the – either he's going to be in the slot in a two-point stance or he's going to have his hand in the ground on the outside of the line of scrimmage in a traditional tight end role. This offense uses you all over the place with Shane Waldron. And I think that when you – and that's the beauty of the offense is that it has the flexibility to highlight your best players. If your best player is a receiver, there's ways to get them the football. If your best player is a tight end, there are ways to get them the football in creative and dynamic ways. And that, I think, is why Noah Fant is looking at this as a receiving tight end, and that's his bag. That's where he makes his money, is looking at this and saying, all right, I had 90 targets. I had 90 targets in Denver, and that offense was not very creative. It wasn't over the last couple years. I had 90 targets in this offense with this much flexibility and everything else. That number should definitely increase in Noah Fant's mind, or the productivity of his numbers should increase. And I think that what you want to see is you want to see a tight end most likely emerge as that consistent third reliable receiving target behind DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett to help balance out this offense instead of it being solely about on the edges and on the outside, that you are attacking the middle of the field as well and taking advantage of these big-bodied tight ends that you have that are athletic, that have great hands, and we'll see if they're able to do that.
We're doing a little bit of bouncing around here between Seahawks and Mariners for the first hour. We talked to you about some of the latest from Seahawks OTAs. You heard from Shane Waldron. You heard from tight end Noah Fant. We talked about the Mariners getting a much-needed series win and giving an unneeded heart attack for fans when it came to that bullpen. I'm going to take a look ahead to the Mariners' June. Let's see what's coming up here on this road trip. That's next.